Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
QNL.
With guest co-hosts.
Benny. The DS.
Wido.
So what's next?
Next, we all give our opinions on this matter in somewhat of a slopshod fashion, and sometimes overlapping each other, sometimes disagreeing with each other, and sometimes starting like a part of a World War III. It's usually pretty awesome.
Welcome, everyone, to number 97 with JC the DS Adam.
Hey, it's me and my new incognito new name that you've never heard of, but you will soon.
Dave White Elk.
That's me.
Phil the Mean Team.
Come back, Mackie, Q&L. I didn't mean what I said.
Yes, you did.
And Creek.
What are you going to do when the women are away? Anything you want.
And myself, Nick, known as Benny. Glad to have you all.
I just want to dance.
In the Senate, we talked about easy starters. Then we talked about a starvation tip. Following, starting in the tundra. And then finally, is there any conceivable reason to build a citizen specialist?
Under the miscellaneous heading, an extended tangent to the easy starters topic from earlier on the spiritual trait in Civilization 4.
We also had a top 10 of the 1,000 clues you're anticipating Civ 5 too much.
Welcome to the Senate, where we discuss game strategy.
Easy starters. La Sombra 1984 posted a poll, which trait is most useful in the early game? He goes on to say, there's many discussions about how powerful is financial and philosophical traits in the long run, but in my opinion, early game differs from long run. The poll is about starting game powerhouse. Which traits best right off the bat?
I did vote in this poll. I don't think I posted on this particular thread yet, though. I didn't have a lot to say, to be honest.
I voted creative. I went with the majority there before I knew it was the majority. How do you beat getting your border pops without doing a thing? In a standard game, you get your border pops in 5 turns for every new city. You don't have to waste 15 to 30 turns building a monument and then another 10 turns waiting for your border to pop. You don't have to hope you grab a religion early and then build a missionary, send it to your new city, and wait 10 turns after that for it to pop. Just boom, you get your border pop, which means you can grab the full fat cross immediately or virtually immediately instead of being confined to only what's next to your city site. Now, sure, you could develop a strategy where you make the most of trying to grab areas that have got 1 or 2 or 3 resources right next to it, but there aren't very many of those places.
I got to agree. If it's only talk about the early game, creative is the one that jumps to me. If I don't have a preset or I want to get aggressive, I want to do a early rush or something, which I don't often do. If I'm only thinking early game creative, I want that border pop and get those resources that are just outside the city.
I'm not sold on that. I can see why creative won overwhelmingly, though. That makes sense to me. Whether or not it's the best starting trait, I think that's map-dependent. Sometimes you would have a majority of your cities not needing a border pop to work their best tiles right away, and sometimes you're not so fortunate, and then creative really comes in handy. Creative can be used to block off AI relatively easily, and it also helps early game, which a lot of people won't mention, in terms of getting your libraries set up sooner and starting on your great person points right away, which can have a huge impact on your attack rate. Really only philosophical can compete with getting the early great people with creative. So it is very flexible. I think, however, that expansive, financial, imperialistic, and charismatic all also have merit and can potentially compete with it early game for their own reasons. For example, expansive, you can one-pop whip a granary at size 2, which allows you to double your city growth many turns ahead of what you normally would be able to do that. And in addition to its cheap workers, you can set up your cities to working order much more rapidly than pretty much anything else, especially if you're not worrying about a border pop or you manage to get Code of Law soon or anything like that. And also with the monuments, you really want to grow and you whip them as soon as you can off of your best resource tile or hammer them out quickly. They should not be taking you 15 to 30 turns.
I've got to agree with you with creative not being good, but not so good. And it's been said earlier in the discussion that you still need 5 turns to get the expansion, and you don't want to do that. You want to settle next to your food anyway, because you want to improve your food. So you're not losing 5 turns or time you need to get the monument. You're actually settling next to the resource and getting that faster. I think the best use of creative is obviously in single player, where you want to block off the AI. That I could understand is really good. But I play MP mostly, and I really think expensive and financial are way better than that, and very possibly imperialistic as well.
Right, that's a good point. Multiplayer plays differently than single player, and except for that one game I played with y'all the other day, I've never played multiplayer.
I gotta bring up my inner lawyer here, as some people raise, like, absolute zero, which is, it depends on how you define early. I'm going to assume early as being an ancient start, because, as I've said before on the show, later start people, you know, I try to pretend you don't exist, but I know.
I love the later starts. I think it's one of the best ways to play the game.
Jim, I'm gonna forgive you for that. I can see also, as people have said, why creative is by far and away leading this poll. For those listening to the show, just to tie in some points, +2 culture per city, +100% hammer for library, theater, and coliseum. But I would vote expansive as well. I would say that creative is best for your capital towards not the border pop, but the library productions that you can get the great scientists running in there. But for expansive, +25% worker hammer increase, which I believe before Beyond the Sword was even greater than that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It was, yeah.
But it only applies to hammers.
Which also means the whip, if you opt a whip, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay, I hardly ever whip units.
The +2 health per city means that, I mean, yes, you're going to want a granary anyway, but I can delay the granary and whipping the monument for reasons already set with regards to your best tiles. You know, you're probably going to have that in your immediate border anyway. You're not going to need your border pop for that. So really, I just end up repeating what everybody else would say, but I would say expansive overall early on would be better.
Actually, I'd like to point out you have a tremendous incentive to go with the granary first if you have expansive, especially if you have any decent quality resource in your initial fat cross at all. Because it's such a cheap whip or easily chopped, you can get the city growing as soon as possible. You actually come out significantly ahead going with the granary first, especially with expansive, if you can do it at all.
It's true. I think it's also interesting to point out this discussion that the initial poster, La Sombra, said financial is a really good long-term trade. But financial, on top of being a very good long-term trade, is an excellent early game trade. Because obviously one more gold on a tile is more important when you only have 2.
Yep.
So it's a 50% boost. So it's really a good candidate for the best trade early game. Obviously it's best on long games, but on the very early game is really good too.
Yeah, you got to acknowledge that there's been lots of discussions about how powerful financial and philosophical is. I thought it was interesting to kind of say, okay, he put, interestingly, what he should have done based on his discussion, his preface, he should have excluded financial and philosophical from his poll.
I don't know, it didn't get a lot of votes.
Yeah.
It's only third right now.
Philosophical didn't, but financial did.
Yeah.
I've seen in some polls the thing you would think would be the obvious winner is not always the obvious winner. In this case, like Phil just pointed out, they didn't get a whole lot of votes. So he was not talking about the long-run game. You know, he specifically said not the long-run game. He said the early part of the game where you're building from nothing. And apparently most people agree that financial and philosophical are not good in the beginning part of the game.
I'm surprised so many people mentioned the boost on libraries, because I think normal speed it's 90 armor. So I'm not sure, because I always be quick speed. And the granary is 60, so you basically have almost pretty much the same boost when you're expensive, just a 10 armor difference. But the timing of the granary is much more important than the library.
Yeah, but if you're going to pick out an important bonus of creative, I would say the library is almost as important as the border pop is, really. But yeah, I agree with you. The granary, expansive's building bonus is probably the best individual building bonus in the game. I picked expansive.
We talked about, just in the poll here, I mean, we mentioned creative already, and then expansive, and then financial, and then actually next is imperialistic. +100% great general immersions, and +50% hammers for settler. It's not a bad early starter, but it's not best, most useful, no way.
That only got not even 7% of the vote.
It's pretty good in tandem with either expansive or creative.
I think Imperialist is really good. To be honest, it's one of the best in MP, even in Ancient, and even more important in later stars, because the sets are more expensive. But the thing is that the people that vote offensive and not Imperialist, the same principle. You get plus 50% on the settler instead of the 25% on the workers. So if you're going that route, meaning shopping and whipping early, I would say, infrastructure in terms of workers and settlers, you'd much prefer expensive. That's why it's not voted really good, but it deserves to be there.
Now, Charismatic is after Imperialistic on this poll, so that's plus one happiness per city, plus one happiness for monument, and then a minus 25% experience needed for unit. The happiness thing I can see for, you know, your happiness cap, it's good. It's not the most useful, but I would be tempted to actually put Charismatic above Imperialistic for the purpose outlined here.
Yeah, we got five that got two or fewer votes. Industrious got two votes. Organized, Philosophical, and Spiritual have got one vote. And for some reason, Protective didn't get any.
Oh, if this were like 3.17 or before, Protective would still be getting votes. But nope. They decided to bug Overflow, so no more. Overflow is capped at the cost of whatever you're producing. Before 3.17 and Beyond the Sword, any excess hammers beyond that went into gold. So yeah. What people would do is they would have like stone or protective, and they would put a bunch of chops into a wall and whip it at the same time. And the 100% gold also applies to the overflow hammers in those patches.
Oh, yeah.
So you could like chop three or four forests and whip and get 400, 500 gold from just building a wall in one of your cities. And if you had protective and stone, it just got ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, like all of a sudden protective goes from being a subpar trait to, you know, you have the ability to easily get thousands of gold in the early game. All of a sudden it's one of the best traits. You can deficit research for like 100 turns.
I think it was overrated. It was pretty cool to do because it shows how good at micromanagement you can be.
You know, it's like a lot of things. It was a much better single player tactic than multiplayer tactic.
Nishant 1911 had a starvation tip, a strategy on how to get something useful out of starving your citizens. He says, starve the city working all major food tiles just before it's going to lose a pop point, and after that, assign all the citizens to scientists, assuming you're using the caste system. This, of course, would work with what other specialist you wanted to use. Despite the food deficit, it will still lose only one pop point, and you would gain a lot of great people points and beakers. After losing one pop point, you can again stagnate the city or grow back your population point. To make the most effectiveness out of this, he suggests you do it in the last turns of a golden age, that you have a city in unhappiness and don't want to whip, or there's nothing to whip. Basically, burn off unhappy people. If the city has no growth potential and has the national epic, and the major one, when you capture one of those huge AI cities that have some tiles to work but they're starving because their population is too big for the size of the culture they've got, in this condition you can either whip a theater if your culture slider is really high, or you can starve the city way above. Okay, that's just terrible English. And he mentions that there's a nice synergy using pacifism, philosophical trait, and representation. I have not taken my use of starvation quite as far as he has. I've noticed when I capture a city and I've got all these people who are going to starve, what I'd like to do is try to whip them away. But if I'm not in slavery, I can't whip them away. So since you're only going to lose one population point, no matter how little food you produce in a turn, even if you're one shy or if you're 100 shy, you're going to lose one population point, you may as well throw everyone and make them all specialists and get something out of them, because somebody's going to die. If, on the other hand, you have the ability to start producing something useful, like building a theater, then it might make more sense in that case to have people working tiles so that they can get that theater built. There have been a couple of times when I've been in a golden age and I've got my great people producing cities maxed out as much as I can, and then I go just a little bit beyond that so that they are losing two or three food per turn. They're not going to get to the point where I'm going to lose anybody, but I am kind of overdoing it and trying to get the most great people points out as I can. the way he's suggesting here to explain what the benefit is, if you take a city and you just throw everybody into it, into specialists, you can get a ton of great people points, probably enough to get you an extra great person in a turn or two in the early game, assuming you haven't already popped a lot of great people. You'll only lose maybe 2 or 3 population points by doing that. And then, of course, you just throw them all back on the food tiles and grow it back up again. And a few turns later, do it again.
This tactic's been around for a little while. This is especially common for somebody who triggers a golden age to switch into caste and pacifism and starve the cities then. Because at that point, you have a burst of great person points. Like, you're suddenly going from 0 in your adversity to 200%. You have a fixed 1 pop per turn starvation rate once you hit starvation, so you can starve the city down and then just switch every single citizen you have to great person points and crank out possibly multiple great people, even 3 or 4 within the time frame of the single golden age. And of course, in Beyond the Sword, where your golden age also saves you anarchy, you can do this pretty much any time you start one. So when you have Taj Mahal, or if you get an artist from music or whatever, you have the potential to take that pretty far and also make some civic switches into new technologies you get as a result as well. Long term, it's not going to beat out just working a stable amount of specialists in terms of great person points, but if you're going to use it for like a burst when you have more of a multiplier available to you.
Golden Age plus pacifism.
Yeah, or just to get to something as soon as possible, then it can be viable. And also, yeah, if you're in caste and you just captured a city and it's starving, you might as well just blast the hell out of the artists and get a good amount of culture in there, whatever.
Yeah, I do that a lot too.
Otherwise, you're not going to be able to run too many artists outside of caste system in a captured city.
I would add that for stuff you can pull that out as well, so you don't have to wait for Golden Age. And Gandhi is a good, an obvious choice for that.
Yes.
But I would underline that it's difficult to do that with more than one population loss, I think. What I do is that I get near 0 food in the granary, 0-1 food left. Then I do it for 1 pup or 2 pup, and then I grow back because I think the loss is too much. Also, it happened to me that I wanted one of the great people that I really strongly, like, say an artist or a scientist. And I just starved my city from 10 to, let's say, 3 or 4. And then you realize quickly when you lose more than 3 or 4 pop, it's not going to happen. You don't have any population anymore to do it, so you only have 3 or 4 great people. So it quickly changes, and you really can use it for 1 or 2 pop maximum.
You know, what I would generally recommend doing is setting, like, a starvation rate initially, and then once you hit the area where you're out of food, that's when you crank out max scientists, but only for a few turns. Because, yeah, like you're saying, every turn you lose a scientist, then that great person farm, then. Still, if you do this in 2 or 3 cities, you can usually rotate out a number of great people across a single short period of time. If you starve too much, you're going to lose out long-term very quickly.
Later in the thread, they also point out that if you're wanting to use this as a long-term tactic, cycling through it every, I don't know, 10 or 20 turns, however many it would work out to be, the population of the city has an effect on how efficient it is. 16 might be too many people, and 10 might be too few, and then there might be other little islands of stability here and there. But either he didn't do the math, or the math he did didn't seem to resonate with me as being done correctly.
Well, I think that it's a very short window you can use that. First off, I would use that beginning of the game rather than in the long term of the game, because at the end of the game, you need so many points for the great people, you've got to have the city stable. It's been said that in MP, some people told me, they play scientists, kind of, which I don't, but apparently there's some points where you can get between 2 pop size, which say between 8 and 9, and go back and forth between that, and you actually gain a little bit more than just running flat amount of sand. So basically, you could micromanage that very well. But I'm not sure. I've never done the math. I've never done it.
Maybe with an odd food surplus. That's all I could picture. I don't know.
I would want to have a humongous food surplus to try that tactic, but if I had a huge food surplus, I would be putting it to another use than that, most likely.
I think it includes having, let's say, 2 food, you have 6 food on it, so like basically 2 pigs or 1 pig and then corn. So yeah. You have 12 food, you have 40 food, so you can sustain 7 pop. And then I think the trick is to go from 9 to 7, because obviously you want to work those 2 food all the time, and maybe get a bit more extra.
I see.
But I think you need to run pacifism when you actually producing GP, and when you're not, you need to use regular farms to grow quickly, something like that.
I gotcha. So you'd have to be spiritual to take full advantage of that then.
Yeah.
Other than in a golden age or whatever. Starting in the tundra, Kamex. Does it tend to happen to him a lot on Terra maps? And he wants to know if there's any hope, because it's frequently an awful position and no easy AIs to rush. And any advice would be appreciated.
Well, obviously, they're not ideal. If you're playing single player, you can probably find a way around it. I would recommend settling to block as much land off the AI as possible, preferably into the good land. You know, you can leave your deer and silver sight off to the east somewhere until later. But otherwise, you're probably going to have to lean a little bit more on specialists and great people points, because tundra starts, and outside of the capital, where you might want to run cottages, you're going to have a hard time finding a lot of good cottage land sometimes. You definitely have to learn how to play some other aspects of the game, maybe even be building wealth and research on occasion. It just depends. And, you know, those starts have iron a lot, so you have some military potential, too.
So listening, tundra, plus one food, plus one commerce. If by a river, your improvements are 25% slower to get constructed. It was mentioned deer and silver.
You probably don't want to be working tundra tiles. For, like, biology or something, where you can have decent farms, you probably don't want to be working tiles that are tundra specifically, unless they're a special resource, yeah, like deer or... Tundra silver isn't the best thing in the world, but it's worth working. It's kind of like desert gold in that sense.
I would suggest that if he's got seafood, that he start focusing on collecting that seafood, and once he's got it, start throwing settlers down, and as soon as you find a really good place to build a new capital, build a new capital.
The way the map generators work, it'll normalize the capital itself, at least on standard map scripts, so your capital won't have any tundra. The problem is you're completely surrounded by it, or at least mostly surrounded by it, so like the only way you can go is south or north, depending on which pole you are, to get better quality land. And sometimes you might get a stretch of desert blocking that off or whatever. I mean, there's some pretty epically bad starts throughout the years that have been posted. And it can be a little difficult to get through that. Like, you're probably not going to win if you're just learning a new difficulty. And you spawn in the tundra, and there's like 7 tiles of desert between your capital and the next good city site that's towards the AI. That's a little rough. But you definitely want to try to settle for the good land available first, and then pick up on all the fishing villages type sites that the tundra tends to have, with your crabs and fish and what have you in the north.
I kind of like those starts sometimes, because I'll get the approach of a one-city challenge, but then I have the options that once I do find a good land or in the position to take neighboring AI, start building more cities. But when you get a city like that, a little island in the tundra, do you ever consider putting 2 cities in that space, sharing the resources?
You need a lot of food to make it worthwhile. It could happen where that's going to be useful for some reason, especially if that second city picks up a strategic resource or something. Like, say it's your only iron in sight, then, yeah, you might be worth sharing food with the capital to have a decent city that can pick up the iron or whatever. But you know, this game is heavily centered around national wonders and strong cities of a certain kind, plus 100% hammers toward military, plus 100% research in your strongest research city, 100% gold, whatever, plus 100% great person points. Taking advantage of those multipliers is a big part of this game. So you want to be careful about dampening your good city sites early. Not that filler cities can't be good, but especially in a case like that where you're probably only going to have one really good city, you want to make sure you're not losing out on your academy research bonus, for example, and maximizing that. Also, on a start like this with Terra, you might consider just speed bulbing astronomy. Don't research meditation and don't research civil service or theology. And you can bulb down the astronomy path through optics and astronomy using great scientists. Run for your life for the new world. So that's an option, too.
Oh, that is a good idea.
You can get it in the BCs if you really focus, but usually it's early 80s.
So say you see that start, and then you decide you want to relocate. You know you're going to move your capital and all that, the associated costs with that. That's a challenge, and that's not something you normally would want to do. But will having an extra 2 cities in that one spot help jumpstart your capital move to a more fertile location?
Probably not, unless you're just talking about getting the number of cities you need to move the palace at all, as you do need 4 cities before you can move the palace on standard maps.
So you have to get your new colonies established, which you would anyway.
Well, come on now. Terra maps are pretty big. It's not like you shouldn't settle any cities on your home landmass. I'm sure most Terra stars on a standard map are going to allow you to get to 6 cities unless you add extra AI. There's more land than there should be on Terra, really. So people are going to get pretty huge, generally.
I'm going to read this properly with the correct affectation. Is there any conceivable reason to ever build a citizen specialist? Asks Decoy. For as long as I've been playing, I've never used these citizen specialists because they simply suck. I've just been wondering, is there even a single situation where someone would actually want to build these specialists? I honestly cannot think of any reason, but I'm very curious whether there may actually be a use of these things, quote-unquote citizen specialists giving you +1 hammer, and the short answer is yes. There is. Just the one that jumps out, even though I wouldn't say it's necessarily the most common of those rare types, is if you happen to have a city that's like a 1 or a 2-tile island, and you'd like to be able to get to a lighthouse sooner, or you can grow more quickly, or be able to, even generally not just on an island city, but just a city that doesn't have a lot of hammers, to be able to do that, to say, build a forge, so you can get more hammers, or even back to that 1-tile city, gee, I don't know if there's decent amount of food that you could work, but you really want for hammers, to be able to get the Mu'ai statues more quickly, so, I mean, those are just a few, but to say that there isn't any situation where citizen specialist is of use. No, there is. I mean, the biggest thing about citizen specialists is that they don't give you any great profit points.
Shouldn't you be slaving in pretty much all the cases you just mentioned?
You can. Like the Mu'ai statues, you can eventually. It'll take a little while, but the citizen specialist could actually get you to the point where you could finish the production of that more quickly through slaving. Same with the forge. Probably don't need it as much for a lighthouse.
Arthur Deer has a pretty good summary of the uses that I can think of offhand and post to number 26 on page, well, for most people, it'll be page 2. They're not something that you're going to be running very frequently, but in a couple special situations, you might consider running them. But it's not like you're going to drastically hurt your gameplay if you never run a citizen specialist at all. And yeah, slaving's generally superior while you can still slave. There are obviously going to be times where you're not in slavery yet, or you've since left slavery, and these are really your only option, at least initially. Not usually, though.
Even in slavery, though, they help get you to that point where you can afford the pop cost.
Yeah, but what you can do instead of that is to whip something else for 2 pop and an overflow, and then you should be able to whip your big ticket item, potentially.
Yeah.
Well, in the end, it's just a matter of if you actually need 1 armor. If you really need that 1 armor to get the next sweep or the next pop and whip, or sometimes it has happened to me that I was missing 1 armor to build something and I only had grassland left on my T-radius, then yeah. But otherwise, the reason you mentioned, and mentioned in the topic, I think that's not good. Even the one where you're supposed to have pyramids, I'm really unconvinced, because the basis of this special economy is to create great people points, and you're not doing that with the citizen. So, only when you micro and you really miss that 1 armor, which basically you can usually get by a plane, or, you know, that brown mountain that you don't even have on mine on it, you get 2 armor, so this citizen is really bad.
I like how someone mentioned that Sistine Chapel, you get the 2 culture per specialist for them. So if you just captured a city and you're not in caste and you only have so many tiles because of their culture, you do get something from them then. I mean, you're basically being forced to run them, but they're doing something.
Yeah. It's the same kind of thing when you've got representation. I mean, you're getting those 3 beakers from those guys too. I mentioned in my How to Pop Your Borders Quickly article, which is helpfully linked in my signature, that's one way that you can get your borders popped quickly, is if you've got Sistine Chapel, just run some specialists. Even if they're citizens, you're still getting 2 culture for each one of those, and that can save you from having to build a theater in those.
You can often, by then, though, just build culture if you want a border pop.
Yeah, but I don't like wasting the production. I'd like to put it to use.
If you're taking a citizen off of a tile to get your Sistine culture, that's essentially losing production anyway. Building culture off a superior tile is often going to win out. Maybe not always, but very frequently it will.
Well, it may just be a strategy that's as specialized as the whole topic of this thread. Not something you do every time, but it is an option. There was like a dozen different ways you get your border popped quickly, and that people just don't think of them all. And
yeah. That's
exactly why I created the article, was because I don't always think of them when I need to know. It's like, oh, wait, I could have been running citizens or something at least.
Yeah, probably the most common mistake people make is they're in cast and forget that they can use an artist.
Yeah, I do that too.
I'm not going to have a use for them, but I enjoy having these kind of aspects in the game, doing things different. Maybe one in, out of 100 times I'm going to do something that the game allows for. I'm not going to find that to be useless. But one out of 100 times I might want to use it. I'm glad those things are there.
Well, they have to be there just as placeholders when you're swapping tiles around or when you have population, but you don't have any tiles that you can work in some situations. The game mechanics just needs to do something with the pop, and there you go.
You know, when you think about other placeholders in the game, like placeholder civics, man, the citizen specialist is pretty awesome.
There you go. You get something for it rather than nothing. Although switching out of decentralization into mercantilism can hurt you if you don't know what you're doing.
I think the best general description of a citizen specialist, you said in thread, Phil, but you haven't said it on the call, which I'm a little disappointed in.
No, I try to at least mix things up. If I said something in the thread, I could repeat it, but people can just read it too, so I don't know.
I think it needs to be said, a little better than useless.
Well, yeah.
Which is like maybe this episode title, I don't know.
I was hoping that the episode title would be, damn, the DS is awesome.
No. The thread title would be, damn, I thought the DS was awesome.
Actually, I would be just fine with that, because it could be taken both ways.
Virtual is a little annoying in terms of micro-intensive to really milk its potential for me, but I still like it as a trait. It's a good trait. You can do a lot if you really abuse all the civic swapping to its potential, but you have to be a little bit creative with how you use it and also think about what your plans are for shorter periods of time.
I'm not 100% sure I agree with doing that. I do underuse spiritual. I've tried to play games to start utilizing spiritual, but I wind up focusing around whatever the civics are that I'm using. If I'm in organized religion, then I'm trying to focus on building a lot of buildings, for instance. I'm trying to focus on getting my hammer production up. If I'm in vassalage, maybe I'm also in theocracy, so that I'm getting 4 experience points, building barracks and stables and dry docks, everything. So I really don't get a whole lot of the benefit out of spiritual. It's convenient that I can change when I want to. I don't have to worry about what the AI is crying about. You know, please change to my civic. Okay, fine. But without that aspect, I really have not been able to learn how to make the most out of spiritual the way that you're suggesting I do, Phil.
Well, I know how to do it, but I hate doing it, especially in single player, because it takes a lot of extra effort, and that's just a no for me. I hate extra micro, and that's definitely extra micro. But if you have some degree of city specialization, you can take advantage of the spiritual civic swaps. Another thing you can do is switch, say, civics and then force your opponent into bad civics and then switch back. And if they're not spiritual, that's not too ideal for them.
Yeah.
And you can really screw the AI like that. Be like, switch into, say, Taoism or Islam, flip the AI into Islam, then switch back. And all of a sudden, you can bribe yourself some wars or whatever you need.
Now, later on in the game, when I get, if it's the one that spiritual gives you 100% hammers on, let you switch civics every turn if you want.
Christo Redentor.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm jumping all over the place to make use of buying with gold, of whipping brand new cities, like conquered from the AI to get rid of unhappy citizens, just bouncing all over the place with it, sometimes every freaking turn. But when I'm restricted to spiritual and have to wait 5 turns to do that, I really can't get as much out of it. And I think maybe it's also partially because I don't have all the civics available to me then, or I'm just not generalized enough until that point. It might be a factor too.
I'd say probably the biggest ones to switch routinely would be between slavery and caste and between organized religion, pacifism, and theocracy when you're talking about early to mid-game micromanagement. Because your hereditary rule, you're going to stay in that until you have something later available, and then you'll probably switch more permanently to either representation or democracy, depending what you're doing. Same thing with, say, bureaucracy. You're probably not going to kick back and forth between bureaucracy and vassalage a whole lot. The situations where you do that aren't very common.
Oh, yeah.
So you're not going to switch that civic line a lot unless you get surprised, declared, and need the draft or something, which spiritual does help then. It's nice to be able to switch civics and suddenly produce 3 units instantaneously. But, you know, even so, the economic civic line, too, once again, you're not going to be switching that a lot. You know, you're probably running free market or state property most of the time once you get to them.
Yeah, I usually run free market myself until I get big enough, and then I go back to mercantilism.
No state property for you, huh?
Generally, no. I've made a point of using it in a few games and certainly like the extra food and stuff, but I just kind of fear that if there's some reason why I get out of state property, my cities are going to start falling. I've just kind of got this an attachment to my citizens. I don't want to kill them needlessly. It took me a while to really start getting vicious with the whip, for instance.
Well, if you're running state property, the only thing that would bump you out of it would be the UN. So if you have some confidence that either you can get the AI to vote for you, or you're just going to be so massive, say you're playing Terra and you know you're going to get a lot of New World expansion, so you're going to have control of the UN, then you don't have to worry about ever getting pushed out of state property, which is nice. You can always defy it, but that can be painful, so...
Well, the last reason why I don't use state property that much is because I love using corporations. I love getting an extra 20 food, 20 hammers, 100 culture, and 5 gold in every city.
Yeah, if you can set it up.
It's something I haven't done on the show in a while, kind of a semi-tradition, and we've got lots of pages with lots of suggestions that are numbered. Hint, hint. I think Phil knows by that reaction.
Yeah, go for it. That's all you, Dan.
It's time for the top 10 clues you're anticipating Civ 5 too much, based on this thread.
Yeah, I was anticipating that.
Poor Mackie and Lisa are missing this. You know, I feel really bad for them. I really, really do.
Damn you, Mackie and Q&L.
It's going to be like a surprise at the end.
Yeah, because I go from 10 to number 1.
So it's Dan's personal top 10. It's not, like, official or anything. It's just some lame list that he just threw together at random. I thought there was some officialness to it. Like,
you're going to get ejected from the call, like, instantly, dude.
Like, there was...
Jim, I can't hear anything you're saying.
Weird. It's like he's muted or something. That's just weird. We can't hear him, huh?
I know. You know, it's like a buzzing in my ear. I don't know.
Strange. He just suddenly cut out. Yep. Yep, nothing we can do about it. Just...
Nothing.
Got it going on the show.
It's an official list in that I've said it's official. So it's an official Dan Q top 10. Yes. Yes, in that respect it is.
Okay.
It could be lame, too.
I can almost have respect for that as long as the word official is in it somewhere.
The official Dan Q list.
If I said official more, would that make it better, Jim? Like if I said it was the official Dan Q list officially?
Ooh. Redundancy is awesome.
Redundantly redundant.
They're up to 721. Can you believe that?
That's impressive.
439 posts, 721 items on the list.
And I wonder how many of them are repeat.
6 or 7.
I've gone through the entire 22 pages of the thread.
Yeah, if it wasn't for a big concrete job yesterday, I'd have done the same.
Oh, we could have had dueling top 10s. Oh, man.
That would have been great, huh?
This thread was started by Abaddon, and he actually starts my top 10. You wonder how long the patch will take to arrive.
Yes.
Number 9, I don't think I'm going to be able to pronounce this username properly. Ojvin Lang, you decide to learn all the languages spoken in Civ 5, so you won't need the interpreters.
That was a good one, I thought.
Techathon, you called your friend at 11 p.m. because you've just found out that Civ 5 has been announced, and you had to tell someone.
I've been called for stupider things.
And kind of the converse of that, your closest friends call to check that you didn't have a heart attack when you heard Civ 5 was coming out. Happened to me, says NZ Jacob. Number 6 goes to Abaddon as well. Will there be giant death robots?
Nice.
Number 5 from Rusty Edge. You delay your fall 2010 wedding for a year because the last thing you want to be doing is wasting time on some annoying honeymoon when you could be playing Civ 5. Obviously. Number 4 from F-35 Ace Pilot, you've already started to write a strategy guide.
How can you do that?
That's how much they're anticipating Civ 5.
They're just forming the layout now.
Yeah, it doesn't mean they're actually going to release this strategy guide, but they're starting to write one. Who knows what they're writing about it?
I was starting to have a lot of respect for this list until I got to that one.
It's not over yet. Anyway.
Hopefully you can redeem yourself.
Besides, some people might actually... Never mind.
So now we're up to the top 3. Number 3 from Jet, you dot map your bathroom floor tiles.
In an hexagon shape.
Number two from Shimura 1804. You spend an hour or more on Google trying different keyword combinations to find just one more article or screenshot. And number one reason, number one clue that you're anticipating Civ 5 too much, you email customer support and tell them you're a beta tester and you lost your key and ask if they could please send another. So I think I redeemed myself.
Well, it's not up to you to decide.
Calling today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. Ripton video game blog, Civilization 5, got a nomination there for Best PC Game, which it didn't win, but it won the Strategy Genre Award, except it actually won Best Real-Time Strategy Game.
Awesome.
They're clearly not Civvers. They're not of our Civ community if they're going to confuse Civ as an RTS.
If you're a professional game writer, that's not excusable. I'm sorry. You're supposed to be able to review all the game genres then and understand what makes the difference between game genres.
Today we were joined by our regular, illustrious, awesome host and editor. What was your name again, Dan? Oh yeah, Dan Quick.
I'd say I try not to let that go to my head, but too late.
Our almost as equally illustrious regular host who makes good use of his initials, Phil the Meeting Team.
I do put TMI in TMIT, that's for sure.
Returning to us a second time is our good friend Dave White Oak Undisclosed.
I didn't want to give the world my last name, so I use that for Gmail and whoever else wants my last name.
Our shiniest penny ever, Nicholas Barber.
Now you notice I'm not illustrious yet.
Yeah, well, you'll be illustrious after your third show.
Okay, makes sense.
Like, this is my third show, so I'm illustrious.
That's infamous.
Oh, I'm infamous?
I thought I was infamous.
Wait a minute. If you get illustrious after three shows, why am I still only illustrious? Oh, no, I was also awesome. Oh, that's true.
And I was almost as illustrious, even though I haven't been on nearly as long as you, Dan, so I'm catching up.
Illustrious seems to fit Makalua or Q&L. Seems to fit the female form.
No. That's Foxy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And last, but hopefully not least, we're not sure if I'm illustrious or infamous. We'll let you guys decide.
Oh, no.
JC the DS Adams.
I could have added some sound effects for you, Dan, but I don't know if you wanted to hear those. I don't know if our listening audience would appreciate some of the sound effects included. All I heard was not from a guy, and that's it.
Dang it, he died again?
Did you say anything past that?
Yeah, not from a...
Cuts off, they're just the wrong time again. Skype decided to kill the joke, whatever it was.
Okay, just seeing if that helps.
Third time's the charm on your joke. Go ahead. No.
No. Owned.
So when's this show going video? When do we get to see you?
Episode 100.
Episode 100,000.
Oh, come on, man.
Now, Dan, he didn't say anything about including us in the video. He just wanted video. Sure, we can accommodate him with something.
Backup recording is still going, probably just as an added security master for your feed. Just save it as an Audacity project first and then export it as an MP3 just in case.
Oh, come on. What's the worst that could happen?
That I lose my second part of the show.
You didn't quite get a chance to say it, Nick. Sorry, I interrupted you, so it won't come true now.
I'm told that I'm not supposed to ask that question, but I just can't seem to help it sometimes.
I didn't get to hear all of it. What was it?
No.
Record date?
July 3rd, 2010.
Civilization 4, Warlords and Beyond the Sword, Sound Clips, copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.